Good evening and welcome to Open Your Mind Radio. You have myself, Alan James.
And you have myself, Stephen George. A very good evening.
Good evening. It's Sunday the 15th of September 2013. Hello, good evening, and it's a very windy day out there. The weather's taking a turn for the worst, Steve, I think.
Great drying weather out there if you have some clothes on the line, except we have to weld them onto the line first.
If they stay in the line, exactly.
Yeah, no, the weather has definitely taken a turn. A lot of head colds and sickness about and sore throats and whatnot, but yeah, I think the winter is definitely arriving.
I think the MMS is going to have to be taken. There's a chap called Ole Damigord, and he's an award-winning author, inventor, former journalist, and investigator who has dedicated some 25 years of his life doing the utmost to reveal what is behind many of the global conspiracies. So, good evening, Ole. How are you?
I'm very blessed, thank you. Very happy to be on the show as well.
Great, thank you for coming on. Much appreciated. Okay, Ole, tell us... Give us a brief synopsis of your background and why you've been doing 25 years into conspiracies. How did you open your mind to it? And then, obviously, when the research came, what made you go into that particular area?
It was in the early 80s when it was the first time I saw one of the documentaries about Kennedy, where they showed the original Zapruder film. If you know about the Zapruder film, that is a film filmed by one of the bystanders just when Kennedy's being shot. And it's very clear when you see that the shot that actually killed him, the last final headshot, came from the front and to the right and not, like the official story, from behind and from the right. You can see the way Kennedy's head is being thrown back and to the left, showing that where the impact came from. And so... at that point, I understood that there's something very weird going on, very different from the official story that I was being told, that there was a lone crazy guy by the name of Lee Harvey Oswald that did it all by his own. And that started sort of a long trip for me, where I started, I think I read about a couple of hundred books about the Kennedy assassination, just to see if I could really understand what had happened, because it's such a multi-layered labyrinth inside an enigma. It's built like that on purpose, so it's very, very hard to figure out what actually happened. And then while I was so almost obsessed about this assassination, I got more interested in the Robert Kennedy assassination as well, and then Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, and so on. And I started after a while to see a very clear pattern on how these different assassinations were done. It was almost like they were using like a bullet list, or like a template on how to make a political assassination and trick the public into believing that something else happened, that it was the deed of a lone crazy guy. The reason why they always choose a lone crazy guy is because if he's alone, they don't really have to look into it. But if there's more than two people involved, then by law, it's named and labeled a conspiracy, and then it's a totally different legal process. And why he's crazy is because then they don't need a reason. That he was just crazy, he shot the guy, and that's case closed, boom. And then very often this patsy is killed or locked away, and so that you never hear about it again.
I see.
And
okay, go ahead.
No, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, then while I was doing this, in 1986, the Swedish Prime Minister was gunned down in the street. His name was Olof Palme, and he was the official story was that it was once again a lone crazy guy who came up behind the couple. They were on their way home from the cinema, and then he fired a shot into the back of the Swedish Prime Minister. He went down. He shot fired another shot at the Prime Minister's wife, and then the killer ran off, never to be seen again. But the official story right away was that it was a lone crazy guy and that the Swedish police was doing everything they could to find him. Then and I totally believed that. I believed that I lived in a country that was a democracy where I could trust the police, that the good guys were the good guys, the bad guys were the criminals and so on. But then after a year or so, I started to see that there was something very weird going on in Sweden as well, because it was like, it was the Swedish assassination was following exactly the same steps as the Kennedy assassination and so on, and that the investigation seemed to be covering up instead of trying to reveal what had actually happened. There was blocking all witnesses. They were making fun of them. They were looking everywhere else than the witnesses was pointing. And it, as the only way they went for, even though it took different turns, but in the long run, it was back to the lone crazy guy after taking different trails. But it was very obvious for an objective observer that this was a conspiracy that was very big, really very big, and where the Swedish authorities had been part in covering the whole thing up and also part of even planning it, which was quite frightening for me to understand. And then when I started suspecting that this was going on, I checked the bullet list that I had made from the other conspiracies that they followed, how to get away with this and how to make it drag out over years and years, so that in the end the public would be so tired and fed up with the whole thing that they would just let it go and it would just disappear in the horizon. And so I checked the bullet list with the other big cases, seeing how they had been done, and then I compared it to the Swedish assassination, and then I could foresee what the next step by the Swedish police would be if that had actually happened in Sweden, if there was actually a big conspiracy going on. And a week or so later, exactly the thing that I had suspected happened, and that really freaked me out, because then I thought, oh my God, even here in Sweden, because we had been so brainwashed with Sweden being the perfect democracy, the white island in the corrupt world where there was, the prime minister didn't have bodyguards, there was no violence, no murders, no corruption, no nothing. And then suddenly this turned up and just starting to uncover a massive boil of infected, stinky things. So that was a very brutal wake-up call for me. So what I did up until that, I used to work as a journalist on a local newspaper. But at that point, I just quit my job and I moved to Stockholm to see if I could find out what actually happened. Not what I was being told by the media, but what actually happened. And I took all kind of crap jobs, like a bus driver, and I cleaned toilets and worked in factories, more or less, that type of thing, just to keep alive and so I could do this research. And then I teamed up with a small group of private people. We were called the private investigators. It was a small group of very sincere, normal people that was just very worried about what had actually happened in Sweden, and who was doing their absolute utmost in uncovering what was going on. And so I spent a few years with them, learning everything I could from each and every one of them, because they had gathered so much information at that time. At the same point, I also discovered that there were two ways to approach this. Either if you really went for the truth, one of the protective ways of doing it was to get the spotlight on you big time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you needed to go really low, under the radar type of thing. So since I was Mr. Nobody, I felt there were so many strange suicides and accidents around this assassination a few years down the line. So I just felt I need to go very, very carefully, step very carefully. So I spent many years looking into this. I tracked down several foreign secret agents. I tracked down assassins. I tracked down mercenaries. I tracked down more or less everybody who was involved in this assassination, but without them knowing, thank God. Because, like I said, these people have a very brutal way of solving problems, and that is, like I say, either you get warnings, and otherwise they destroy your career or your reputation, and if you don't move back, they get at your kids, or you end up in a bathtub fully dressed, or you shoot yourself in the left temple when you're right-handed, or
can I ask you something about that? How far down the line have you been with this? And did anything happen to you, or have you got any instance where something like that happened?
I had two friends of mine who got murdered.
That's quite serious.
Who died in very strange circumstances. And at that point, I was so deeply involved in this that I felt I need to leave Sweden because it was not safe for me anymore. I had a visit at home as well. And it's really scary when you know what type of people you're dealing with. And so I felt I want to stay here a bit longer, so I left Sweden.
Right.
And moved to Spain. And this here in Spain, I managed to write a book about it. It's called Coup d'etat in slow motion, because that is what I think actually happened. It was not just an assassination. It was a real coup d'etat, but done in slow motion so that the population wouldn't really notice what had happened. And one of the reasons why I'm so determined to get the truth out there about this and many of these other cases is because it's affecting everyone's daily life, with most people not being aware of it. And so that's why I feel very strongly about getting it out there, even though it's a risky business.
Definitely. I mean, anything we do in the alternative media, you know, we've, as I said, we just mentioned one of our own guys here, Ben Gilroy, who the government want to lock up because he's actually getting to them. He's promoting a system over here called direct democracy, which gives the power back to the people. And obviously the parasites in our government want to shut them down because they want to keep the power and you want to keep screwing the Irish people. And we're not having it anymore. You know, we're trying to put an end to this. And there's a big lockout on the 18th of September. But just getting back to the conspiracy thing, let's just take, for example, very quickly, John Lennon. We have the movie out, you know, Mark Chapman, apparently he's the guy that killed John Lennon. In the movie, Jared Leto from a rock band, I forget the name of the rock band now, I've forgotten the name of the rock band, but he's a singer in that rock band, and he had to put on weight to play Mark Chapman. Now, they talk about Mark Chapman being an MKUltra, a mind control steel pigeon. What's your take on that?
I totally agree upon that. And also, I know who shot John Lennon, which was absolutely not Mark Chapman. And this is one of the things I've been focused very strongly on for the last few years, is to track down who actually committed these things. And what I found is that there's extremely strong links, personal links, all the way from the Kennedy assassination to the Watergate burglary, to the killing of Che Guevara, to the killing of John Lennon, to the killing of Martin Luther King, Olof Palme. Many, many of these people have been taken out by the same small team of people that I'll get back to. When it comes to John Lennon, what happened was that John Lennon was a boil in the butt for these people. You know, when somebody is standing up for peace, and people start listening to them in more than just the thousands, but in the millions, they become a major problem. And this is why people have been taken out. People like Martin Luther King, Gandhi, John Lennon, Bob Marley, these type of people, Lady Diana, and so on. When they start up and say, stop this, you know, let's be friends, let's join arms, you know, let's join instead of destroy, let's make babies, not wars, and so that the global elite cannot push their agenda forward, then they deal with these people. And John Lennon was just about to release his comeback album, and he had been J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI director, and other people way up in the American government had been, they hated Lennon. They hated Lennon. And what happened this evening was that Mark Chapman, just like you say, was MKUltra, just like in quite a few of these incidents, they use people that are, I wouldn't say weak, but very receptive to hypnosis and other things, and they are being put through quite awful things, different types of torture and so on, that will make the personality split into more than one. And then they can compartmentalize the mind of these people, getting them to do things, being one person, and then kick them back into another personality. So the other personality has absolutely no idea what the other one did, and so on. But they don't trust these people. They make them the fall guys. They don't trust them being the skilled killers. So that's why they only use them as patsies, as far as I know, at least most of the time.
Exactly. I totally agree with you there. And I think we can do that with the JFK killing as well. You know, they're set up as patsies and they're just passed off as the killers. But as we both said, we know that there's more people involved than
Can I just go back to John Lennon here?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, because Mark Chapman was there in the morning, and he was. It's quite important also that if you look at the Bush family, George Bush Senior and Junior, the Bush family is very central in the global elite, and they're extremely criminal. Extremely criminal. They pop up everywhere when you look into these things, and also both John Hinckley, who did the shooting at Reagan, but also Mark Chapman. Both of these two people, the two patsies, were actually so-called friends of the Bush family. But while they were being friends, that was also why they were going through these MKUltra things. Anyway, in the evening when John Lennon came, they came straight from the studio going back to the Dakota building, and it was Yoko Ono, John, that came out, and Mark Chapman was standing to the right. He was just standing there, not saying anything. They left the car and went into the building. Yoko Ono was like 5-6 meters in front of them. She entered the building, and John passed Chapman and started walking towards it. Now, Chapman was standing to the right, and the shots fired, all of them were fired, and hit him from the left. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. Many of these conspiracies are no-brainers. You just have to look into it and see what actually happened. Go back to the crime itself and then make it up from there what actually happened. So the person who was standing to the left, it was a doorman, an elderly gentleman looking man who was standing in like a small doorway, and that is exactly where the shots were fired. Now, if you track down this guy, he's mentioned in the first articles that came out, and also the first interviews. You can hear some witnesses also on YouTube. There's one woman saying they came just after the shooting, and the woman said Lennon was arguing with the doorman. He was arguing with the doorman. That doorman, his real name was José Perdomo, and José Perdomo was for 10 years. The head of a small hit team. It's called Operation 40, and it was created in the early 1960s. It was called Operation 40 because it was a team put together of highly skilled assassins, mostly exiled Cubans, and it was created by the order of Eisenhower, and the guy who was put in charge of creating this team was Richard Nixon, quite unknown at that time. And the guy put to fund the whole thing, not pay himself, but to fund the money from oil companies in the South, and also get other millionaires in on the deal, was George Bush Sr. Now, this team was put together for the original task was to take out Fidel Castro, which was a real problem on their agenda. They really wanted to get rid of Castro during many years, and they made several attempts. But this team, once they started having problems with JFK, which was after the missile crisis, where it was so close to open a nuclear war. I mean, it was like Kennedy was more or less sitting with his finger on the red button, and with the generals around him just screaming, push it, press it, press it, you know, get going. And Kennedy, with tears in his eyes, said, I refuse to be the one who starts this. And it was almost like at that point he understood the madness that he was involved in, and he decided, I am not going to be part of this. And after that, he made a totally different approach. He went out, he said, I'm going to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I'm going to withdraw from Vietnam. I'm going to destroy the Federal Reserve so that the money power will come back to the real people.
Can I stop you there? The Skype is getting so bad. There's so much static coming off the Skype that we're just finding it hard to actually hear you. We're just going to disconnect and reconnect again, okay? So just bear with us. Okay, sorry, the signal was getting so bad with Ole that...
I think it's a satellite link, is it?
A satellite link was acting up there, so we're going to try and call him again. Are you there, Ole?
Yeah,
I am indeed.
That's brilliant. Go ahead, carry on. It's just the link got so bad that the static was wiping you out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. How long did you hear?
Yeah, no, just carry on what you're saying about the Bush family and how they were involved. And you said about Kennedy wanting to, they were wanting him to push the button. And he said, no, I don't want to get involved in this. I suppose that's where the speech came about from Kennedy, I suppose.
Okay, after that thing, Kennedy started a totally different approach. He went out, he said, I'm going to destroy the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I'm going to destroy the Federal Bank Reserve, which is a massive slavery tool, actually, controlling the money and putting the population into total debt. He fired many of the top guys in CIA and NSA and so on. And he said, I'm going to withdraw out of Vietnam, which was a war that hadn't even really started. They were only like 16,000 advisors in Vietnam. And that was when the power elite just said, shit, let's take this guy out because he's totally out of order. And the reason why they took him out in an open street, in front of cameras and all of these things, was to show the people in the corridors of power that to scare them and to really say that we can get anyone, anywhere, anytime. And this is the reason why they, from time to time, make these hits right in the front, right into the open. It's just to shut people up. And you will see also very often following these assassinations or different terror attacks or so on, that there's almost like a conspiracy of silence afterwards, that people in on high level positions, they never say anything critical. They always follow the official story. They know that they don't know the details maybe about what happened, but they know the power behind it, and they know that they could be the next in line if they didn't behave.
Exactly. Tell me something, because obviously I'm conscious of time. Tell us about what your take is on the Woolwich beheading and the Boston massacre or bombs.
Okay, one of the elite, they use different methods. They use a very classical one that the Romans invented. It's called problem, reaction, solution, which is instead of forcing someone on the population and then having lots of problems with demonstrations and underground movements and guerrilla things and stuff like that, they secretly create a problem. Often this is in the form of a bomb, to get a reaction, an emotional reaction. So the bomb needs to go off where there's women, children, all of these things, to get as much of an emotional reaction from the population as possible, so that they can move in with a solution. And this solution is always more control, more centralized power, more surveillance, fewer civil rights, and so on. It's standard procedure. The other one they use is distraction. That they, when something is getting a bit out of hand, they sort of let something explode to the left or the right or something in media, like boom, thing that would distract the attention from the public away from what's going on. And if you remember, I don't know if your listeners are aware of the Bilderberg Group and the global elite. The Bilderberg Group is very central.
Yeah, they would be. Yeah, very, very aware of them.
Okay, super. Okay, the Bilderberg Group is very central in this. And since 1954, when it was created, it's been in very, very big secrecy. They have yearly meetings in different places, places every year, with top secret surveillance and all of these things. Then, due to people like you and me and many others who have been digging into them, just following them, tracking them down, breathing down their neck, uncovering their agenda and who has been part of the meetings and so on, it came to a point here in 2013 where suddenly they couldn't avoid going out in the open with it. So instead they tried to invite the media, not into the meeting, that was totally secret anyway, but into the grounds, and the meeting was held in Watford, just north of London. And the meeting was held there on the 5th and 6th of June this year. But just before that, to get the attention away, they made this thing, the so-called beheading in Woolwich, which in the old days, these conspiracies used to be really well planned and with quality and real people dying. You know, they were actual things that happened. But lately, the last few years, they've speeded things up so much because there's such an awakening going on, and people are becoming more and more aware about these false flag operation and psyops and so on that no one knew about before. So they need to speed it up, and they're getting extremely sloppy nowadays. They're even using actors, and this is what happened in Woolwich. If you look at that, it's one of my personal favorites because it's so badly done, so badly done. Can I go into a little detail around that?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, the official story, I'm sure you know, that these two black Muslim guys were driving up the road. They were passing this army barrack in Woolwich, and they saw a guy with a T-shirt where it said, "Help for Heroes," walking down the street, and they thought, oh my God, we're going to get this guy. So they came from the left hand of the street and crossed the other lane, drove up onto the pavement, and officially hit this guy with a car. Then they went out of the car, chopped off his head with a big axe and a big knife, and pulled his body out in the street. And then they went to the other pavement, and they were filmed by a guy with a mobile saying, "We're very sorry that your women had to see this, but this is what's going on in our home countries, and you can't trust the government, blah, 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 blah." And then after that, he crosses the street back to the other guy. They're standing there waiting for almost 25 minutes before the police comes. And the people in the background, totally calm and nothing. There's just this body lying apparently officially without a head in the street. And then after 25 minutes, the police comes, and you can see the aerial photo of these two black guys. Suddenly they just rush up to the police cars, and the police just boom, 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 shoots them. First they're dead, then they're alive, then they're dead, then they're alive, and so on. But that's the official story. If you start looking into it, step one is that it was a big distraction away from the Bilderberg meeting. Suddenly the Bilderberg meeting was totally forgotten. There was all this thing about Muslims being crazy, and the riot started and so on. But if you look into the whole thing, this is, you with all of these things, you have to just use Farmer Brown logic, what I call it. 2 + 2 = 4. There's a logic sequence to things. There's a logic behind feelings that are, and emotions that are going on in a site like that, and so on. And if you just look at the plays, the first thing is that there are two different takes of the same guy. He's saying the same words, but if you look at his gestures, the angle of the two films are different. Different angles, and his gestures are different as well, but he's saying the same words, or saying that you can see that he's talking from a script. Then in one of the takes, he's got clean hands, clean, the knife is clean, there's no blood on the anything. And then in the other one, his hands are totally red on all the side, not just like squirted blood or anything. There's no blood on his clothes. There's nothing, just the hands. It's like he's dipped it in paint. And then if you look at the background action, if something like this would happen, if you check out other actual happenings, you will see that people around it, if somebody is murdered like this, normal people are furious. They try to throw rocks at the guy who did it, or string him up, or fight with him, or take away his knives. Here, the background action is like 100 meters from where he is. And they're just standing, hanging around, not doing anything, looking the other way, picking their nose, and so on. And you've got two women also who comes with shopping bags while he's being filmed. no shopping trolleys, and they just passed this guy with a big bloody axe and a big knife. They don't even look at the body in the street, and they just pass him very calmly. And they do both of these takes that are different, have the same background action, you know, the same people coming in the background, but differently.
Is that guy dead, though, Lee Rigby? Is he dead? Did they kill him?
No, absolutely not. So absolutely not. This is a staged event. It's to create an emotional reaction from you, distract you, to create an emotional act, and then look that way. And I think the reasons why they've started with more and more actors, they've done that with Sandy Hook, the Aurora shooting, the Boston, and so on, is that I think the problem they have when they kill someone in real life, if there's a big terror act or something like that, they have a massive problem with their relatives. They have problems with, you know, like if you kill somebody, that mother and father, they will pester you. You know, they will never give up. So you have a massive problem. The more people you kill, the more relatives you have after you that will just not give up. They will just keep on, keep on, keep on. So I think that is one of the reasons why they started to do these staged event. So if I can just go back to details, because you can look these things up yourself on YouTube and compare and so on. If you think of it, they were just outside an army barrack, yeah? Okay, there are hundreds of soldiers in there,
yeah.
Bodies of this guy they just chopped the head off. Where are these guys for 25 minutes? Where's the traffic? Why are there no horns playing? Why are there no cues? Why are there not the surveillance cameras were turned off as usual? They are that standard procedure. All of these different assassinations, you can count on it. There's no cameras. No cameras on. And also, I worked as an extra in many commercials and stuff on Mallorca. So I know I'm really good at walking in the background. You know, I can chew chewing gum and walk at the same time. And one of the things you're told is they make a mark. They say, okay, they make a cross here in the pavement on the asphalt. And they say, okay, this is your starting point, and that point over there, that's where you finish. So if we'd have to take 14 different takes, that is where you start, that is where you finish. If you look at this one as well, you can see on the pavement or the tarred road, there are these crosses showing exactly where he goes, where he starts to go, and where he finishes.
Well, can I ask you something? How do you rehearse this? You know, they obviously couldn't rehearse this at the location. So
I'm just going to say how this is staged, how you normally do, if it's a commercial or whatever. If you shoot a commercial, you pick out the scene. Often, if you have to do a scene in a city or something like that, you pick a place where you can cut off the roads on whatever, like 200 meters. You can't block the traffic, so you need to make it that they can drive around. Okay, and that is exactly, if you look on a Google map, this is exactly how it is. You can redirect the traffic around it. Then the extras that is used for the background action and so on, they always come in a bus. And then you have almost always white trucks that are used for makeup, clothes, these type of things. If you look at what happened in Woolwich, the street is blocked off. What is it blocked off with? A big bus and a white truck and a cab. These are blocking off in one direction. In the other direction, the road is just diverted so that there's no traffic coming in that way. Then you have, there's absolutely no blood from the body. I mean, here we're saying that his head was chopped off. You cannot do that without an awful lot of blood. There's absolutely no blood. Then on the aerial photos taken later, you have blood on the pavement showing how they pulled the body out in the street. But on the early photos, nothing. Then you have the car that is supposed to have come from the left-hand side of the car on the street and then crossing the other lane where there's traffic coming towards you. It should be. It's crossed over there and then up on the pavement and then it's crashed into a sign with a sign pole. But the sign pole is absolutely not dented at all, even though the car is totally crashed. There are no skid marks. There's only oil coming out underneath. So the car has not hit anything except it's been put there. It's been put there with a crane or something like that. I don't know. Then you have the, you know, they have, there's, when they film it, there's this woman who they say was just passing by on a bus. She lies down to this beheaded body, totally calm, and sort of is looking at it and then gets up and starts talking to the guy with a knife saying, "Oh my God, you shouldn't have done this." You know, so calm. And people in the background fiddling around with their mobiles, being bored. It just does not make sense at all.
Tell me something. Obviously, the cops who appeared on the scene and shot the actual the black guys, they obviously were shooting blanks, being actors.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
It's
of
like
course.
It's like, I suppose, an episode of The Bill, you know, where they obviously pre-rehearse it and everybody's dressed up. And where's this Lee Rigby guy? It was there such a guy called Lee Rigby? Was he a name made up and he was an actor and now the actors disappeared or gone off somewhere? I don't know.
I don't know. I just know that I work a lot with Photoshop and it's very easy to create a face. You know, you can just say the eyes from someone, pick a nose from a third person and just put together a face. It's very easy. And if you look at it, like... They scripted it. They script them so badly. You know, it's to create a so strong emotional reaction as possible. So they put it together like the bad guys. If you look at them, they're dressed in black, black, black. They're black skin. They're black. Everything is black. And then you have the hero, which is even called Rigby. You know, you got the Eleanor Rigby thing. That yeah. sort of it resonates in the minds of people.
Yeah.
Rigby, and then he had a t-shirt with "Help for Heroes." I mean, it's, you know, it really is low-class B-film type of script, you know. And if you listen to the commentator who commentates it, it's like a really bad script and how Baghdad violence has come to London and
okay.
you know, the Muslim.
Okay, we've about 5 minutes left, 6 minutes left. Give us your synopsis on where we are now today. As you said earlier, think the cabal, the global elite, are speeding things up and they're getting desperate because they're making mistakes because of what's going on. We've all seen the escalation of what's going on. Where are we now? Are we facing another false flag based on the fact that they're getting desperate to have something else?
I feel so, so optimistic. I think this is an absolute amazing time to be alive because it's crackling around them. It's falling apart around them. And I've spent like almost 30 years tracking these people down and finding out that whatever terror act I looked into, whatever civil war or whatever it is, you can track it down to this group of people. And it's not a big group of people. It's like a couple of thousand. And we're like 9 billion, so it's actually an absolute joke that they are so-called powerful, that we let them be that. And I think that the more of these false flag operations, they're doing a lot of them at the moment, trying to, especially in the States, these mass shootings that is going on, it's to blame the guns so that they have a reason to disarm the population. That is the whole idea. Get rid of the guns from normal people so that they can just take over by military force and martial law. So this is why they arrange all these mass shootings. And really, when you look into these mass shootings and the Boston bombing and so on, they didn't really happen. They even use the same actors. I send out a weekly newsletter, video weekly, twice a month, where I show visually that, you know, so you can compare. You can actually see that, for instance, with the Aurora shooting, the Boston bombing, and the Sandy Hook, and so on. It's the same sheriff, but different states. The same sheriff. You got the same in one. You know, like in the Sandy Hook thing, one actor or one woman, she was the headmaster at the school and was killed there officially. Then suddenly she's a witness in the Boston bombing, You know, it's so clumsily made. They even use the same photos. They're really not clever at this.
And I think that's going to happen more and more. I think we've reached our time there, Oleg. Listen, a big thank you for coming on. And I think what we will have to expand on this. I think we'll have to get you on in a couple of months' time and do a full interview and go through more stuff, because, as you say, there's a lot more to go through. We're just running out of time. But a big thank you for coming on. I'm going to pass you over to Steve, and Steve will get all your contact details and your website so I can let our listeners know what's going on. So over to you, Steve.
My website is lightonconspiracies.com. Lightonconspiracies.com.
Thanks very much for that, Ole. Yeah, we actually had someone post the website address up in the chat earlier, and I was actually looking at your website there earlier on today, and it's very interesting, good information, and anyone who's looking for your book, the book is available from there as well, and I'm sure it's well worth the read. So listen, Ole, again, for myself as well, thank you very much for coming on, because the information you've given us has been very clear, very concise. As one of our listeners on the chat room said, that he agrees with you 100% that you've definitely done your homework.
Brilliant stuff. And again, thanks for coming on, Ole. Just stay with us there for a minute, and we'll go to a musical break. We'll be back after this.
This is Open Your Mind Radio on OYMRadio.com, MSIRadio.com, and UnitedReachRights.com.